So I managed to get some of my thoughts together onto a PowerPoint, which is fairly miraculous for me, because usually most of them appear too late to make it to a PowerPoint. So I want us to look at three stories as we lead up to communion, basically today, sharing bread and wine together. And just set the context really for some of the background to this as we think about the Passover in Exodus 12, the Last Supper in Mark 14, and then the Road to Emmaus in Luke 24. So they'll be the key passages that we'll be working around. And just reminding ourselves as we come to share bread and wine together, why we do this, the significance of it, what it means for us, and what it's meant for different generations down through history. So, our story starts in Exodus, in a place where there was a lot of this sand. And the people of Israel are captive in Egypt, making what together?
Bricks.
Probably not like this, but for sake of example, these bricks. I'm fortunate enough to have tickets to go and see the Prince of Egypt this Saturday in London. Really excited about going to the theatre. Actually, we went last week as well. Because I sneaked in on another trip, which Beth got a ticket for Tim for his birthday. And I said, oh, can I come along as well? So, yeah, we've been to the theatre last week and we're going this Saturday to see the Prince of Egypt.
出埃及記第12章預節嗰個部分，咁主要係講有沙啦、有磚啦呢一扎嘢。咁你可以睇翻嗰段經文。
And the opening song from that musical just takes us back in time to what it would have been like for me, anyway, as I listened to it, to build with bricks.
great. Just captures the atmosphere, doesn't it? The whips, them working, sweating, building things for a nation that's not theirs, happy to comply with a force that is pushing them in directions they don't want to go. They're oppressed, they're captive, and they desperately want to be delivered. And somebody comes and delivers them in the form of Moses. And it's a wonderful story, and it's beautifully told, I think, through the Prince of Egypt. The music by Hans Zimmer, and the lyrics just tell the story in a very powerful and compelling way. Quite comedic in parts as well. But as we listen to that opening song, we get the sense of oppression, the sense of working and needing their hope restored, being delivered from the sand and the heat and the sweat and the toil. They just need to get out of here to be somewhere where they're supposed to be, and this is not the place. And they're delivered. And the final deliverance comes as death swirls across the city. Beautifully told again in the musical, but depicted in Exodus. And the people of Israel who've been told what to do to avoid death of their firstborn, and that is to have a meal, to plant the blood of this lamb that is part of the sacrifice, part of the meal, on the doors, and death will go over those houses which has this blood on the door lintel, which is what happens. So the people of Israel survive that. The Egyptians don't, and finally they're released. And that Passover meal is then celebrated. And they remember what it was like to be in Egypt, but what it was like to be released, the Passover meal. Takes them back to their history, to where they came from, to where they shouldn't have been, to the hope of somewhere different, to the hope of the promised land. So as Jesus calls his followers, his disciples, together for the Last Supper, it's that feast of Passover that they're celebrating, they're remembering at the end of what we describe as Holy Week, where Jesus has come in triumphant at the beginning of the week into Jerusalem, gathers his disciples together on the Thursday before Good Friday, and they sit and have the meal together. The sort of meal that we remember by having communion, by having bread and wine, by remembering Jesus' words to his disciples. And these will act as illustrations this morning only, because obviously we need to do this in a COVID-safe way, and drinking out the same cup and breaking bread and drinking from the same, eating from the same loaf, not a good thing for us to do at this particular season. And we long for a time when we can do that again and aren't in this season where we perhaps have felt contained, have felt some of the things that maybe the people of Israel felt, not to the same extreme, of course. And so Jesus, as he gathers in Mark, it's told in each of the Gospels, but in Mark 14, he sends two disciples into the city to find somewhere for them to have this feast together, the feast of the Passover. And they end up in an upper room, sat around the table. There's those wonderful depictions, aren't there? Pictures of them sat around the table, whoever you like to watch in that respect and be influenced by, but they're just doing what most of them would have done in their families. Celebrated, remembered the Passover. So this would have been such a familiar thing to them. And yet Jesus puts a different twist on it and brings himself into it. And as he breaks the bread, he says, "This is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And they're thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is the Passover. It's got to do with you. How does this link with the Passover, with this meal that we're celebrating? Thank you, Yen Yen. And he takes the wine after supper and pours it and says, "This is the blood of the new covenant poured out for you." And makes comments about the fact that they won't drink this again until they're with him in the kingdom. What's this got to do with this Passover thing? And there are so many connections as you think about it. And I think often we don't necessarily think about the connections. We're in the space where we do what this means to us, however we interpret that for ourselves, that Jesus has forgiven us, that he's died for us, that he rose again. But actually for them, I'm sure as they reflected on it afterwards and wrote the accounts of it, they would have thought of many of those connections. So Jesus' incoming kingdom is like them being released from the oppression of Egypt. They live under the oppression of, we live under the oppression, if you like, of darkness, of Satan and his kingdom, which is alive and well. And yet we step out of that just as they did, and we step into a new kingdom, the blood of the new covenant, where the land is open to us, where we bring God's kingdom with us into those different situations. We've overcome, we've conquered the forces that are against us. There's a sense of victory, which I love in that trumpet call at the beginning of that piece that we played just now, a sense of hope amidst the desperation. And there's that sense of hope in Jesus being the first fruits, as he's referred to, going through death, stepping beyond it, establishing his kingdom. So lots of resonance back. Of course, for them, they were captive. They were under Rome, weren't they? In the same way as their ancestors had been under Egypt. And they thought, many of them, I'm sure, that Jesus was going to conquer Rome. So when he died, it was devastation for them. This wasn't supposed to happen. He was supposed to be the sort of current Moses leading them out. And he's died. Which leads us neatly into our next story, for which we need a little bit more sand to lay the trail, just because it's here and we might as well. And so the next story, where we encounter the Last Supper, is of course that lovely telling of the two disciples on the road. So let's make the road through here. Sandy, dry, dusty road from Jerusalem to Emmaus. About 7 miles is the distance. So a bit like walking from the centre of St Albans to the sort of northern edge of Harpenden, I guess. That sort of distance. So along the road, there would have been rocks and things lining the roads, of course, as they walked along. Graham Hendrick pens a lovely song. "Took me my walking shoes made for the road, and as I was leaving, the air turned cold. Just the starlight and you and a stone in my shoe, and then suddenly there was this stranger." So he depicts these two disciples walking away from Jerusalem, devastated, wondering what on earth's going on. And he draws alongside them as they walk. And they stop up here somewhere towards the end of their journey and head into a doorway to stop overnight. And he says he's going to carry on. He's going on
And they convinced him to stay and stay with them.
And he comes in to the house. And they sit down and they have bread and wine. And as he breaks the bread and as he pours the wine, their eyes are open because they haven't recognised him on the road. They would have kicked their shoes off and left them by the doorway after their walk. Leave their shoes by the doorway. Yeah, here's sandals. So I did this to represent our shoes and what probably Jesus was wearing, just for visual reflection, really. The wine from the starlight, the sun rich and red. This wine is my blood, he said, my body, this bread. And then the voice that was tossed, his voice was tossed by the wind and was gone. And then suddenly they knew this stranger, this comforting stranger, was still on the road. And what I like about this story is that it brings something from the past, two things from the past, really. Because they would have been reminded of the Exodus as they broke bread, drank wine, as he blessed the bread. That's when he was revealed to them. It would have reminded them of the Last Supper. But actually, of course, this is after Jesus was resurrected. So this is so applicable to us, to you and I. Because this Jesus, who's a historical figure, is alive and well today and walks alongside us. And again, Graham pens these words. He walks me down my lifelong street and fills my empty spoon. Beside the greenest fields, he lays me down. He leads me by still waters and revives my hungry soul. If you see his lamp approaching you, you'll know he's still on the road. And just as their eyes were opened, these two disciples, in the midst of their despair and all their angst, I pray that our eyes will be open. We have a fresh encounter here on this Sunday morning as we take bread and wine together of the Jesus who delivers us from all that oppresses us, that reminds us that we're God people, that we have treasure in these fragile jars of clay, to use Paul's language, that we are created fearfully and wonderfully, as the psalmist reminds us. And that God loves us just as he has poured out his love on every generation down through history and walks with us on the road if we will recognize him as he does that. And if we pause in a moment, we can connect with him, as we'll do this morning. So I just want to pray for us as we just spend the next few moments sharing bread and wine together, that we would have that sense of encounter. We come often to these sort of spaces thinking, well, who am I? Who am I to dare to even come before God? And yet, he welcomes us. He welcomes each one of us. We're each important and special to him. It's not about what we've done. It's not about how good we've been this week or how, you know, anything to do with that. It's purely that we come openly and fragile in a sense of need, that Jesus meets us, often meets us in that sense of despair where we're thinking, well, I don't know how this works, but I just pray that God will meet me. And so let's take perhaps one or two things that are perhaps weighing heavy on us at this particular moment and bring them with us as we share bread and wine together and say, God, would you release me from what's holding me captive? Thank you that you've forgiven me those things that I've intentionally done wrong, those things that I've done without knowing that I was doing wrong. But more than that, would we encounter the God who says, you're enough, you're worth it. The whole of humanity was revalued as Jesus went to the cross. And hope was restored through his resurrection and ascension back to heaven. All of those things are our journey. We have died to ourselves. We've decided to follow Jesus. We're living life, doing our best to follow him, to live out his beliefs and values. We will die just as he did, sort of metaphorically, many, many times, coming to the end of ourselves, and we'll reach out to him and say, we need your help. But also, we know that we will be resurrected fully at the end of our days and go to live eternity, in eternity with him, in the fulfillment of that kingdom that he talks about. So, we have little pots which have juice in the bottom, and if you tear the top off, have a little wafer in the top. So there are two layers to the top. One reveals the wafer, the next one takes the lid off so that you can drink the juice.